When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everybody, this is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
And welcome along, everybody, as the Cricket Badger intro music fades away. We are delighted to stay back for another edition of the Cricket Badger podcast. The Cricket Badger podcast, sponsored by Manscaped.com. For the best in male grooming requirements, have a look at Manscaped.com. Quote Badger when you order, and you get yourself 20% off and free delivery. But without further ado, let's get him on, because the guest today, it's exciting to welcome on. Rob, how are you?
Yeah, really good, James. You okay?
Yeah, Rob Franks, England disability cricketer, and a fairly inspirational and very interesting story, I would suggest. And you've got your book out, From Disability to Ability, My Story, which is available in all good places these days. And we'll have a bit of a crack and talk about your book and talk about your journey you've had, which is quite a... an exceptional journey, I would suggest. But first of all, let's start off with why you wrote the book. What was it that what encouraged you to put pen to paper and get that in between two covers?
It was quite incidental, to be honest. I started writing down my thoughts. It was nothing more than that. I was just writing down what I was feeling at the time back in 2012. And I actually found I really enjoyed doing it, so I started a bit of a journal. And I thought it's something for my 12-year-old to look back on in years to come. Well, he wasn't 12 then, he was 2. So I thought it had something for him to look back on. And at the back end of last year, I've been writing bits down for the last eight or nine years. And I just thought, you know what? Let's see what a publisher thinks to it. So I wrote it, wrote a few more bits, and just thought, let's see what a publisher thinks. And they looked at it and they went, we love it. Can we publish it? And
You've shown the book on the screen there, but there is the front cover in a close up of your little face there poking out from the front cover. From Disability to Ability, My Journey, Rob Franks, and the foreword as well, Rob, is from Michael Atherton, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I was chuffed to bits when he agreed to do it. I met Mike a while ago, 2021. When he did an article on me in the Telegraph, and he said, if there's anything I can do, just let me know. I speak to him, text him probably weekly, just to catch up, see how he's doing. And I said, look, would you mind doing a foreword for me? And he said, no problem at all.
Nice. Very nice indeed. So Mike Atherton's seal of approval, got the Cricket Badger podcast seal of approval now as well. But let's go back before, just for people that don't know you, you're an amputee, you've lost your leg, and you therefore play for the England disability team.
Yeah.
But prior to that, when you had two legs and you were playing cricket, you did play cricket before that, didn't you? Because the book starts with you playing cricket, and it starts with the incident, doesn't it, which kind of led to your you losing your leg.
Absolutely. I mean, I started playing cricket when I was six, back in my hometown club called Froome Town Cricket Club in Somerset. But yeah, it was 2011. I was playing cricket and quite incidentally slid for a ball and I felt my knee twinge a little bit. So I went and had an x-ray, and about 12 hours later, the doctor said, can you come in? We've got to have a bit of a chat with you. And I thought, maybe my knee's a little bit more ruined than I thought. And
he said, it's never a good sign when they act quickly, is it?
No. To be honest, I didn't even register with me at the time because I thought, my knee, what's going on here? It turns out I tore my meniscus, but they said that wasn't the issue that they were worried about. They found a 5-inch shadow on my distal femur, which was quite a shock, to be honest.
You went in for you went in for the X-ray and stuff, and then you went in to get further treatments. And once you went all the way there and came back because they got the wrong leg and various other things, you had a few false starts with all of that. But
there was a few.
But I mean, the actual amputation wasn't immediate, was it?
No, that was I had my amputation in 2018 in March. To go back a little bit, I had the tumour taken away and it came back. They said, you know, go back playing cricket, do whatever. But at the time, they messed up the operation a little bit. And I was in a full leg brace. And I was playing my first game for Dorset Disability. And I played a shot, just a very normal shot off my hip. And my leg snapped in half. Turns out they didn't repair the where the tumour was. They didn't fill it with anything. And it was basically left hanging. It was being held together by 2 millimetres of bone. So it was an accident waiting to happen.
That sounds, for stating the bleeding obvious, that sounds very painful.
Yeah. I mean, I can only describe it as you're in the woods, you walk on a twig and the twig snaps. That's exactly how it sounded.
Yeah.
Very strange. Oh, next thing I know, I'm in a heap on the floor. My leg's going one way, I've gone the other, and I'm screaming. Apparently, I don't remember it.
I'd imagine if in a similar situation, I'd be screaming as well. The journey then from there, is it immediately obvious that you have to have your leg taken off, or is there a hope given to you?
Well, they repaired it and they put an internal fixator into my legs. So that's screws, pins, plates, rods. It was going from my hip down to my knee. But the fracture never healed. It was just so painful. Apparently, I reacted to the metal inside my leg. And with the fracture not healing, I was in tight waggly. I mean, I can't describe it. It was the worst time of my life. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't work. I couldn't do anything. I was on 28 painkillers every single day. None of the painkillers were touching it. So I said to my wife, I said, look, I think we need to look at amputation. And she said straight away, let's look into it. So I went to see my surgeon, who said, not happening. He goes, you can manage it on painkillers. I explained I couldn't manage it on painkillers. There's no way I can manage it on painkillers. And he just looked at me and went, tough, you need to get on with it. So I said, one way or another, I'm going to have this leg taken off.
Painkillers aren't particularly good for you. And if you're on 28 per day, I'd imagine you feel pretty out of it as well, don't you?
Oh, very spaced out. I was on so many opiates. It was just, I wasn't me. My wife has always said I'm Tigger on speed. And I was more like Eeyore. You know, I was so down. I was just so depressed. I didn't have a life. I wasn't a husband for my wife. I wasn't a father to my children. It's not fair on anyone. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to do something about it.
I say it's a big decision. I mean, you say in the book, choosing to lose my leg was one of the best decisions I've ever made. It's opened up opportunities for you, as an amputee that you wouldn't have had, obviously, with two legs. But I'd imagine it's still, I mean, you mentioned talking to your wife and let's look into it, but it's still a big thing to do, isn't it?
I knew it wasn't 100% guaranteed that it would take me out of the pain I was in, but I knew there was a chance that it would. And it was a chance that I was willing to take. And I mean, I've spoke about it in my book, no bones about it, without my wife's and my family support. I wouldn't be here now. Yeah. You know, they've been the glue that held me together. And best thing I ever did.
And talk us through that process then. I mean, I presume if you're thinking about having just one leg and the thought of sport's probably a long way away from you, isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't quite know how I was going to go about it, but I knew I would go on and play sport again. I was determined no matter what happens, I will be playing cricket, which is my first love. My sport is my sport. Rugby was my other sport, football a little bit, but cricket's always been my first love. And I always said, doesn't matter how I do it, I'm going to be back playing cricket one way or another. I don't care if I've got to do it on one leg. If I've got a hop, I will be back playing.
And you went, had to go down the crowdfunding route, didn't you, to actually fund the amputation?
That's right, yeah. I didn't have £15,000. So I decided to start crowdfunding. And within the space of 4 weeks, I went from zero to £15,000.
Wow.
It's obviously quite an unusual procedure and campaign, And I think people really took it into themselves with that and really helped me. Without them, I wouldn't be here now.
That's quite speedy as well, isn't it? You know, 4 weeks, you've gone from 0 to 15,000. That's a lot of money to raise.
Yeah. I chaired the Jeremy Vine show on BBC Radio 2. They heard about my campaign and they had me on the show. And no word of a lie, I was on £2,000 when I went on there. And as I was on the phone with them, all I could hear was my phone buzzing. And I'm like, what's that? Something's going on. I didn't know what it was. I went off, finished my interview, put my phone down, looked at my phone, and I was on £13,000. I couldn't believe it. £11,000 in the space of about 4 minutes. I mean, it was just unreal. It was just, I'm getting a bit emotional about it now because it was just bizarre, you know, just two people I've never met, never likely to meet. They put themselves as anonymous, gave me £1,000 each.
Wow.
Unreal. Absolutely unreal. I mean, I cried buckets. I've said it in my book. I cried buckets. It's unreal.
And I guess from being on 2000, going on to Jeremy Vine show, to then coming off and seeing you've got 13 grand there and you're close.
Yeah.
It's gone from being a bit of a dream to being reality there. You're close enough to actually get across the line, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at that moment, I knew that the potential was there to happen. I had to find a surgeon that would do it, which was another issue. But I found someone who did it, called Mansour Khan. He agreed. I had to go through a few hoops. I had to have a psychological assessment to make sure I was of sound mind. Now, if anybody who knows me is very shocked that I'm of sound mind. But and I had to go through a pain management consultancy as well. And both of them ticked it off and said, look, just get it. Yeah. Just get it done. You're of sound mind, which surprised me. And you're clearly in the pain and there's nothing we can do. So it's the best course of action. They were shocked that the NHS refused.
Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls. Before we get on to you post-amputation, you talk in your book about mental health and the struggles you had with that. And I'd imagine being on 28, 29 painkillers per day and the thought of all of that pain and everything else is a huge contributory factor, but it changes who you are. I mean, I've been made no secret on here. I had a period in my life where I really struggled mental health wise.
Yeah.
It's not easy, is it? And when you kind of have your situation and you can't necessarily see a way out of it, it's pretty grim.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I've got PTSD now through everything that's happened. I mean, it's been such a journey. Yeah, it hasn't affected me for years. And then all of a sudden, like that, it's coming. Yeah. It's life, you know, I'm getting through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, mental health is the single biggest thing that men don't talk about. And I put it in my book and I was, sorry. And I was... I had to be strong to put it in there.
Yeah. I totally get you, because the first time I mentioned it on here, I was thinking, should I mention this? Should I not? And probably not in the same sort of bracket as yourself. But I found that kind of facing up to it and talking about it was the best way to actually deal with it. And I find now, because even now I can feel times where I'm thinking, no, it's kind of, the kind of grey fog's coming down a little bit.
Yeah.
You kind of find ways of coping with it that you didn't have initially when it first comes to you. Do you find the same thing?
Absolutely. You find your own coping mechanisms. And I'm a bit of a talker. I'm a hugger. You know, I always have been. And that's helped me massively. And putting it in my book was like a light bulb moment. Because I'm like, if this helps somebody else to talk, Brilliant.
That's what men don't do, isn't it? I mean, sure, yeah. some women are the same, but largely men are particularly averse to going to the doctors. And particularly, if people say, "How are you?" You say, yeah. I'm fine. I'm great. Yeah. How are you?" Rather than, "I'm actually really struggling at the minute." Yeah. You need to kind of give yourself that ability to say, "I'm actually really struggling now."
Thing is, my family didn't even know. Mm. Not until I put it in the book, not until they read the book.
Yeah, because you hide it.
The only person I knew was my wife.
Yeah, you hide it from people. Because you are a little bit, there's still now a bit of stigma and a bit of sort of shame attached with it. Because you, for a man, it feels like you're being weak, doesn't it? And it's not. It's actually strong to say, "I'm struggling. You know, I need a bit of assistance here."
Massively, massively. Yeah. If you're struggling, speak. That's my biggest advice. Speak to somebody. Mm. You know, I mean, so many men don't. So many men. There are so many people, not just men, but people in general, they don't speak. Talk to each other. Help each other out. You never know what someone's going through.
There's a right at the start of your book, there's a bit of an intro, I think it is, but it's I'm going to just read it out to you because this actually stood out to me right at the start, where you say, "A massive thanks to those who cut us out of their lives when I became disabled. You allowed us to see the light and realize that you really were not our true friends in the first place. And as I've always said, it's your loss and we are so much better off without you." That's quite hard hitting. But when you found that people kind of turned their backs on you.
Yeah, they wouldn't answer the phone to us. It was bizarre. Very strange.
And people you called friends just disappeared.
People that I've known for years, many, many years, just blanked us, completely left us. Why? I don't know. Is it because they don't know what to say, don't know what to do? I don't know. But I haven't spoke to them from that day to this. But they've let us see, like I said in the book, they've let us see the light. You know, we know who our true friends are and who our true family are.
You tend to find, I've always said to people, I don't do the lottery, so this is always a completely empty conversation. But if I won the lottery big time, I'd write down who I considered to be my friends when I won it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You'd find people coming into your life that were only interested in the cash.
Oh, massively.
And that's kind of like a slightly kind of flippant way of saying the same thing. But in periods of success and in periods of adversity, you find out who your real friends are, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, completely. You realise straight away who's going to be there for you and who's not. Mm. It's strange. It's human nature, I suppose.
And does that make you value the people that stuck with you even more?
Oh, hugely. I mean, I'll take a bullet for every single one of the people who stood by us. Mm. I can't emphasize that enough. They're the best people, you know. It just goes to show that some friends really aren't. They're there for their own means, not for what you can do for them. For what you can do for them, not for what they can do for you. I can't get my words out.
Put the teeth back in. Let's go to the day then where you actually had your amputation. What's going through your head when you're heading to for that surgery and you know that once you wake up you're gonna have a part of you missing? Is how does that compute inside you?
All the way up the run up to it, into about 3 days before, I was absolutely fine. I was like, it's just gonna be amazing. Weird thing to say, but it's gonna be great. You know, I'm gonna be out of pain, rally, rally, rally. The thing that hit me the biggest was when I was packing my case and I was only packing one shoe. And I was like, blimey, this is really happening. And I broke down. I wasn't regretting my decision or anything like that. It was just, it hit me. Mm. And I was like, wow, I'm going to be coming home with one leg. The day of, we picked the kids up early from school and I drove down to the hospital because I knew it was the last time I'd be driving with two legs, last time I'd be able to drive a manual car. So I drove up quite happily. Got to the hospital and I was, because it was a private hospital, I was put into this room and it was like a hotel room. They say, "Oh, what do you want for your dinner?" And I was like, okay, they gave me this menu, steak, prawns. I mean, you could have it all, but do you want a bottle of wine with it? It was like, I'm going to be legless in a minute. I don't want to be legless before I'm legless. You know, it's so. My wife, she said, "Look, we're going to go," because I was due down for surgery. And Harry, my little boy, burst into tears. And I went, that was it. I was gone. It was it hit me massively what such a big thing this was, not just for me, but for him as well. Mm. Which, it messed him up for a while. I'll be honest, it messed his mental health up for a while. And that still kills me now, knowing that how upset he was.
But he's got a dad. He's got a dad now that is actively able to do things with him, rather than somebody who was on 28 painkillers a day and really struggling.
It's, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I couldn't explain that to him when he was so young. He understands it now, but it's still, I've still got dad guilt about it.
Yeah.
But what can you do?
So you, and I can't imagine what it's like. I mean, you come around from an operation. I mean, you're obviously expecting it. It's not like it's a surprise you've got one leg when you wake up. But that must still feel very weird.
Well, I woke up in intensive care because I lost a lot more blood than they expected I was going to.
Right.
And there was a horrible nurse there. And I don't remember it, but apparently she was just being horrible to me. And I put a complaint in. I can't remember what I said or what I didn't do or whatever. But it was the day after when they took me back from, or the morning of when they took me back from HD, from the high dependency unit to the bed, and I woke up and I was compensmentless. I looked down and I was like, wow, that's weird. And I laughed. I just sat there and laughed, and the nurses come running in and say, so I was crying, and I was in fits of laughter. I was like, I've done it. This is amazing. And then I started getting phantom pains.
I was going to ask you about that, because I've heard people say that you still feel like an itch in your big toe or things like that, which isn't there anymore.
Oh, I get it now. I've got it at the moment. You learn to deal with it. It's nothing that can stop me doing anything, but sometimes you just know it's there. When my first phantom that I had, it felt like I was having cheese wire between my little toe. Mm. And it felt like somebody was pulling this cheese wire up through my leg. It was the most bizarre feeling. Yeah. And another one was I felt like I had a stone in my shoe. And obviously I didn't have a leg to take a shoe off or anything. And I just kept shaking my leg to get rid of this bloody stone. And it obviously wouldn't move. And it was just there for weeks. But I did something called mirror therapy, which is where you put a mirror between your legs. And it mimics you having two legs again. And it tricks your brain into thinking you've got two legs. Yeah.
A bit like when they, on the old comedy programs, when they used to stand next to a wall and put one leg up and down.
That's it. That's exactly it. And it tricks your brain into thinking you've got two legs again, which is, yeah. I don't know how it works, but it worked. And touch wood, I've not had a huge amount of phantom pains. I get them now and again.
Okay.
This will good.
I'd imagine then after you've kind of got your head a bit around that and everything, there's quite a bit of rehab there, isn't there, after losing a leg? You've got to kind of get used to being...
You'd think so. I had some physio in the hospital. I had my leg off on the 21st of March. I had some physio on the 22nd of March. I proceeded to fall over. I had a Zimmer frame. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be able to do this. No worries, fell over. And then they said, we'd like you to have a walk around. I chucked the Zimmer frame to one side. I got my crutches and I started walking. And I went up and downstairs, and the 23rd of March, I went home. I was booked in for 10 days, and I went home after two. Right. So I basically rehabbed myself.
Okay. And
maybe not the best of ideas, but it was the way I was going to deal with it.
Yeah. You have to deal with it yourself and get used to it yourself. Yeah.
Okay. And I'd much rather be at home sitting on the sofa than sitting in a hospital bed with my wife 35, 40 miles away. And her having to come up every day. At least I was at home to annoy her. So.
at the risk of making your eyes fill up again, I would imagine your wife's been a constant source of strength and support through this, has she?
Unbelievable. I said from the beginning, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be here now. I wouldn't be sat where I am now talking to you. Mm. I'm convinced that I just wouldn't be, I'd still be a shell of myself. If it wasn't for her strength, her determination to get me legless, for want of a better word, she's just everything to me, you know, and she knows it. I keep telling her, I tell her every day that if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be here now doing this and doing what I love doing.
I mean, she sounds quite strong as well. The fact that you go to her and say, "I'm thinking about having my leg off," and she says, "Yeah, let's look at this and let's do this." That's kind of an investment in you and strength from her at the same time, isn't it?
Oh, hugely. We met actually online dating in 2009, and it all started in 2011. And when it started, I said to her, "I won't blame you if you left." She said to him, "So bloody stupid. We get through it," and that's words that are always stay with me.
I'm doing online dating. You sound like you've had much more success than I've had.
Yeah, it was. To be honest, for me, certainly it was love at first sight. We met 3 days later. We moved in together.
Yeah,
and then 12 months later, we had Harry. And yeah, we've been married now. Got married in 2012, so 11 years this year.
You didn't hang around there, did you? No. Basically saw something you liked and you pounced on it.
Yeah, yeah. Get on with it, quick.
we'll come back after this short break in a second, and we'll talk about you with one leg then tackling the world of cricket and seeing where that took you, because we've done the hard bit, really. We're kind of getting the rewards then on the other side of the leg coming off. We'll see you in a second.
Perfect.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger Podcast.
The Cricket Badger Podcast is fueled by coffee. Take a look at cricketcoffeeco.com for some excellent speciality coffee for cricket badgers. Expertly roasted and ethically sourced, the coffee is fantastic. cricketcoffeeco.com. Quote Badger with your order and you'll get 10% off. I'm James, as always, talking to Rob Franks on today's Cricket Badger Podcast, his book From Disability to Ability, My Story, chronicling his path from, the chronic pain he was talking about from the accident he had, from the tumour in his leg to being on one leg and amputee, and then going on to play for England for cricket. I mean, all of us, I mean, probably everybody watching this and listening to this later, has dreams as a kid of playing for your country. At cricket, you're like me. You talk about being in love with the game from an early age, exactly the same as I was. And I always had these dreams inside my head of captaining England, playing in an Ashes series, playing Test cricket for England, all the rest of it. Never was ever likely to come true because I was never good enough. But you, by the route you took about having the opportunities that being an amputee gave you, you're able to wear the three lions.
Yeah, it was most bizarre. I was playing for Dorset and we had a final. It was a Super Nines final up in Wolverhampton, and Rich Hill, the ECB disability head, was there, and he said, "Look, we'd like to send you to the Regional Performance Centre." And from there, it just went on. It was just an unbelievable moment. I've never felt such pride putting a shirt on before. Wearing the three lions, it was a dream come true. Like you say, it's something I've dreamt of since I was knee high to a grasshopper, you know. I was nowhere near standard to become a pro, let alone play for your country. But weirdly, lose a limb, play for your country. It's bizarre, isn't it? It doesn't make any sense.
Do you think it's easier to play cricket having once had a leg and knowing how you should move, or do you think it's easier for people that have had to kind of being like that for life? I can't quite work out in my head which way around that would go.
I would say, honestly, it's probably easier if you were born like it. Now, the reason being, when I had two legs, I would trot up the pitch, hit balls over cover, wherever. Because of the prosthetic, I can't run on my day leg, which I normally use. So I'm having to be more static in the crease. So I'm having to find a new way of doing it. Now, in the first season after my amputation, I was playing for Middlesex. 10 weeks after my amputation, I played my first game, which was, again, bizarre. We went all the way to Essex, and I got a first ball duck. 325-mile round trip for a first ball duck. I was not very happy, but I was back playing cricket.
Yeah.
And that was the only time all season I got out. I averaged 84 with a bat in the end, and I got like 18 wickets. in disability cricket, and it was just unbelievable. I was batting better than I had for many years, which again makes no sense considering I've got this lump of metal attached to my leg. Funny old world.
Technique and batting, bowling as well, all about keeping your head still, the balance required and all that kind of thing. Are you not lopsided when you've kind of lost a limb, or do you have to kind of counter that? How did that go?
I just had to find a new way of doing things. Whereas I couldn't bend my knee to go for a sweep shot, I couldn't get on my knee. So I had to physically bend down to do it rather than get on my knee to do it. But it looks ridiculous, but it works. Hmm. I mean, now reverse sweeps, something I've been working on a lot, but I can't get down on one knee to do it again. So I'm having to come around and do it. So it looks very strange, but it works. So I'm hopeful to be able to bring a few of them out this year.
That's sure. I've never played. I've given up playing cricket now, Rob. Too old.
I'm never too old.
Talk about playing for Middlesex there. You've been, regional performance centres and what have you. England debut. First time you stick on those three lines and you run out there playing for your country. How does that feel? After all you've been through as well.
It was unbelievable. When I bat, I have a runner. And my first game's at Lord's. So there I am, padded up, went out to bat at, I think, number four. Got to about 40-something. I can't remember what it was. And my runner ran me out. I was beyond gutted. I was determined to get a 50. I was so determined to get that 50 on debut. But he ran me out. And there was a few choice words. I wasn't very happy about it. But it did take the fact that I play for England. You know, if I never get another cap, I can always say that I've played for England.
I'm going to totally disregard your feelings here by saying he must have felt dreadful, mustn't he?
At the end of it, he did. By the time I'd finished what I was saying, it was just emotions.
Yeah,
I'm not normally like that. I'm quite an emotional person. I will say how I feel. But once it's said, it's said. There's no, would never harbour it later on or anything. But I thankfully managed to get a couple of wickets as well. So it sort of took the sting out of it a little bit. And we won. That's amazing.
I've seen a little bit of blind cricket, which is incredible. I love watching the wheelchair tennis. I do quite a bit of work in tennis and the wheelchair tennis before I go in and do tennis off tube. Sometimes waiting for the match to start, you can see the court and you can see the wheelchair tennis players playing beforehand and they zip around the court. So disability sport is kind of quite big, isn't it? In all different kinds of sports.
Oh, it's huge.
In terms of cricket then, the England disability team, what kind of disabilities do people have that play for that? I mean, we've been through your situation, but there must be quite a range of disabilities in that side.
There are many types. You've got learning disability. Mm. You've obviously, that can be anything from autism right the way up to severe learning disabilities. And you've obviously got physical disability. So I know people with one hand. I know people with one leg, no legs. They play in a wheelchair. I've seen people keep wicket in a wheelchair. I mean, it's just inspiring because you see it. And, me compared to them, it's nothing. When you've got no legs and they're still playing cricket, it's unbelievable to see.
That's amazing.
Now in the ECB National Disability League, they've allowed deaf players in as well to play. So you're playing against some real top class players who haven't got a physical or learning disability, but they've obviously got their own disability, being deaf, and they're walloping the ball down 80, 85 miles an hour. It's horrible.
I think you saw the tweet from Jacob Lunn. He's based in Somerset.
Say hello to him. How are you,
Mal? Jacob's got autism. He's been on the Cricket Badger podcast a couple of times. And on the audio version, the little bit you're listening to the Cricket Badger podcast is Jacob's voice. I got him to voice out the little stings that we do on the audio. But he was looking forward to seeing you on screen and listening to your podcast later as well, because he plays for the Somerset Disability.
That's right. Yeah, I play for a combined team, Hampshire Dorset. We're new in the D40 league this year, so it's quite an exciting time to be involved. It's my first year back for about 3 years in disability cricket. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Without trying to sound patronising, which I don't mean to at all, it's a disability cricket is a brilliant way, isn't it, for people who otherwise wouldn't have had the ability to play sport to get involved in something which is fantastic for everybody.
Oh, massively. Do you know what? I love coaching disability cricket because I work in cricket full time. That's my job. And I love doing and working within the disability sections because you go to a Super Ones hub and you've got players that have got maybe Down syndrome or whatever else. And just seeing them hit the ball, smile and laugh, it's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah.
You can't beat it. You cannot beat seeing somebody do what they want to do and get such joy from it. It's to me, it's very inspiring, very inspiring.
So they're already ahead of me because I never hit the ball and smiled.
I am a grimace.
That didn't go where I wanted it to go. I find it incredibly inspiring, your story, and I imagine there's plenty of other inspirational stories around the England team and elsewhere. You talk about people in wheelchairs keeping wicket, people with no legs playing cricket. I mean, puts everybody else to shame. I bet there's plenty of other people, including me, that are kind of watching or listening to this that are thinking, I have got no excuse when, relatively able-bodied to not do something when there's people out there with, the situations that you've experienced.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. That's why, I skipper on, I captain one of our teams at Parley Cricket Club in Dorset. And when someone goes, I've got a twinge, I'll say, I've got one leg, get on with it. And they're like, yeah, fair enough. Can't really say a lot about that, can I? And they get on with it. So,
so you say you work in cricket full time now. Did you before the amputation?
I was working part time. I was doing it was like casual stuff for the Dorset Cricket Board. I was going to schools, teaching Chance to Shine. I now do that 3 days a week. I work at a cricket centre in Dorset 2 days a week. I coach at Parley. I'm a pathway coach as well for the Dorset Cricket Board. So I do county pathway. My little boy, Harry, he's in the under 12 county team.
How's he going?
Yeah, he's doing all right. He's doing all right. He's batting probably better than I've ever seen him at the moment. So, he's always bowled seam, but 3 days ago he goes, Dad, I want to see if I can bowl leg spin. So we got a net in the garden, so I took him out, showed him a couple of things, not that I'm a leg spinner, and he turned it sideways. So tomorrow he's got a one-to-one with one of our coaches, and I'm going to see if we can turn him into a leggy. So hopefully, hopeful. I think if he works it, he could do well as a leggy, to be honest, but we'll see.
Good luck to Harry for the season ahead with his leggies and his batting. You say you were part-time. Did that mean you had a job doing something else then prior to the...
I'm a chef by trade.
All right, okay.
Yeah, I'm a chef by trade. Have been since I was, left school. Obviously, when I had my amputation, when I had a disability, really, I found that I couldn't stand in the kitchen for 16, 17 hours at a day, at a time. Yeah. So I went away from it and I became a coach.
Yeah,
I just thought it's something I've always wanted to do. So it's actually 9 years ago today that I qualified. So
I was actually watching there's a chef film from about 2015 with Bradley Cooper in it. Actually, I was actually watching that this afternoon. Coincidence.
There's a very good one called Boiling Point with Stephen Graham.
That's very good as well.
Yeah,
I like cooking, but I'd never nowhere near that standard. My when you see them on MasterChef where they cook things very nicely, but the presentation looks absolutely dreadful.
Yeah.
That's me. I can cook things quite nicely, but then I put it on a plate and it looks like a dog's thrown it up.
You know what? I don't think that's a bad thing. The thing is, you eat with your eyes, don't you? Yeah. If it looks nice, it's going to take you quite likely to taste nice.
Yeah.
I used to drive me nuts putting these little bits on the plate and then, just give me a pie and chips. Give me pie and chips.
Yeah. You see them with the little squeezy things, putting the little dots of...
That's it, And you've got your vinaigrettes and putting it around, and you've got your crushed pea and you put... It's more hassle than it's worth. Just give me steak and chips, pie and chips.
So do you do the cooking at home then?
We share it. Yeah. Actually, we just bought an air fryer, Ninja air fryer. Unbelievable. I highly recommend everyone to get one.
I got one about 12 months ago and it is brilliant.
They are superb, aren't they?
Absolutely love it. Yeah, absolutely.
We haven't used our oven for about 5 months since we've had this.
Nice, and it's energy wise, it takes less.
Oh, huge, yeah. huge yeah. amount we're saving. Yeah. So that's well, highly recommended.
This is the Cricket Badger podcast sponsored by Insert Air Fryer Companies.
My name is Jacob and I sent the Badger a message and now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet @cricket_badger.
So when it comes to your cricket these days, then, I mean, what was your England career and how is that still going?
No, I've stopped now. I'm too old. I'm 44. Everyone's younger than I am. I can't keep up anymore. I got 12 caps and I captained once, which was an unbelievable moment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. To lead the team out was unbelievable. It's only because of an injury, but
that doesn't
I'll take it. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care how it comes. I don't care. Yeah, I was the only player there. I'm captain. And yeah, it was a great, really good day at Old Trafford. And yeah, we won. So that was a special moment.
So you've got 100% record as England captain.
I have. And I'm never doing it again. Keeping that. I don't know if you've heard of it, but the Disability Premier League. I would like to think that my bowling's good enough to get back in it this year. I haven't been in it yet, but I'd like to have one more crack at that. Sadly, it turns out I could be wicket keeping this year for Dorset and Hampshire because we haven't got one. So I'm not going to get in as a keeper. I'm nowhere near good enough. But we'll see. Yeah. I want one more crack at the DPL. If I can get one, just a couple of games in the DPL and share what I can still do it, I'll be delighted with that.
I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that we ask everybody that comes on the podcast, former players, current players. Do a 20 questions. The first one is always, what is it about cricket that pushes your buttons? I mean, obviously it did prior to your amputation and it has done since. What is it about cricket that just turns you on?
I love the fact it's a team game, but you play it on your own at the same time. As a bowler, you've got your team around you, but it's up to you to deliver. As a batsman, you've got a partner, but again, you still got to deliver. And I just love the fact that you've got teammates around you to bolster you. And I just think it's such a fantastic game to... For camaraderie, certainly. I mean, some of the chat we have on the field is awful. Not in a bad way, but it's just awful chat. but friendships, I've had so many friendships come out of it, which is the whole idea of it, in my opinion. Now, I've done the first team, I've done the second team cricket, you know. I just want to go and play now and have some fun.
What I like about it, Rob, as well, is that you get... Because you're in a dressing room with 10 other people, you are talking and creating those friendships with people that you might not otherwise have ever have met.
Yeah.
And not necessarily from your line of work or your field or your, you create friendships with people that are just different to you, which is healthy, isn't it? It's good.
Oh, it's brilliant. I mean, certainly in my team, we've got a head teacher. You've got a coach, which is me. You've got someone who's a lawyer. You wouldn't have all these people in the same room in any other sport, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, cricket's just the best, isn't it, let's be honest.
Well, you don't need to convince me. if I could let you relive a day on the cricket field, it could be prior to your amputation or post your amputation, which one would you want to relive? What's your best moment?
Leading England out without a shadow of a doubt.
I thought you might say that.
No, there is one other one. There was a Pro-Am T20 back in 2019, a year after my amp. And it was like a bit of like an IPL auction. And I was bought. It was all for charity. And I was bought for a team called The Cube. And we ended up, it was a T20, Pro-Am T20 down at Northampton at Wantage Road. Okay. And we got to the final and I got 3 for 33 in the final and got the man of the match or player of the match. I mean, that was just an unbelievable moment as well, because I was bowling in tandem with Azhar Mahmood, the ex-Pakistan captain.
Oh, wow.
And I had Peter Willey, who was umpiring me. It was just an unbelievable day. So, yeah, those two things certainly would be something I'd like to relive many times.
Flip side of that question is always, what's your worst memory?
It's got to be snapping my leg. It's got to be.
I was thinking, though, when I was reading that part of your book, if you hadn't had that injury, you're talking about actually snapping your leg, aren't you?
Yeah.
If you hadn't had that injury that day where you did your knee, would you have ever had the x-ray to find the tumour to actually maybe save your life potentially?
No, and I wouldn't be here now.
Yeah, so cricket saved your life.
That's exactly. I'm tweeting a lot at the moment, and I'm always saying cricket, how cricket saved my life. Mm. And it's a fact. If I hadn't had that injury, I wouldn't be here now. I'd be 6 feet under, which is weird. So somebody somewhere was looking after me that day.
Kind of, yeah. It's kind of as an angel on your shoulder that's got maybe a perverse sense of humour, but actually was looking after you. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. That's strange, isn't it? There's something in it somewhere. I don't know what.
I'm going to put you in charge of world cricket for a day. Rob Franks is on the main door, the big office at the ICC. What would you change? What would be the first thing you'd change about world cricket? It could be disability-wise, or it could be more general.
Probably not going to come as a surprise, but I'll get rid of mankads. As a captain in club cricket this year, it scares the hell out of me. I know we're going to encounter so many issues with mankads this year. And I've already said to even at Nets, I've said to my players, if you mankad someone, don't expect to play next week. I don't want to entertain it. There's got to be another way. You know, okay, the batsman's gaining ground. Did that 5 runs. It's not bringing the mankads. I hate it. I think it's the worst rule. I've only ever seen it once in a game, and I called the bloke back, and he scored 100, which didn't please my teammates very much. But I did the right thing, and it scares the hell out of me because I know there's going to be so many issues about it this year.
Whenever I tweet about mankads or run out at the non-strikers end, because mankads family don't like it being called mankad anymore. But
that's very true.
But I get so much. It's so divided. I mean, the world's divided now. But people are either for it or people say, well, he's cheating. The non-striker's cheating. So it's just it's within the rules. I just don't like that rule. Yeah, you can say it's within the rules, but it doesn't mean I can't actually not like the rule. I just think that rule is just a totally unsatisfactory way of dismissing a batter. And like you say, there are other ways to do it, aren't there? You know, people getting penalised runs or whatever, however you do it.
There's no pride in it. There's no pride with me going into my delivery stride and taking somebody's belts off. I don't see what the point is.
And I would describe it as a bit sneaky. It feels like creeping up behind somebody and kind of going, boo, you're out.
Exactly this. Yeah. And I've had many arguments about it with many people on Facebook, on Twitter, everywhere. You know, I'm sticking with my opinion. I think it should be outlawed. They won't outlaw it, but I think something needs to be done about it.
Just needs to be tinkered with. I mean, ultimately, I said to somebody the other day, ultimately, what does it, if somebody is gaining 11 yards from the non-striker's end, does that really matter? Because if he's halfway down the track and the bloke plays a four defensive shot, he's going to get run out. So you're never going to go too far out your crease, are you?
Exactly. I mean, it's one of those rules. And I mean, I could talk about it all day and I could probably get a lot of hate on Twitter for saying it.
But I think the root of it, though, is going back to what you said, where obviously on the IPL, I think there was one today.
In the
IPL today. But in the IPL, international cricket and stuff, you've got all the cameras, you've got the ability to actually look at it and adjudicate, haven't you? In club cricket, where the umpires are largely doing it for the love of the game, there's enough rubbish they get thrown at them. I mean, there was a lot of videos last year from various parts of the country where there was almost riots on the pitch after umpires' decisions and things. And so the umpire's job is tough enough without giving them that to go with.
Massively. I mean, I was bowling last year, and it's to make you laugh. I bowled a ball. I was an off spinner now. So I bowled a ball. Batsman gloved it straight to the wicketkeeper. How's that? Umpire looked at me and went, hang on a minute. He goes, Bat, did you hit that? I went, what? He goes, Batsman, did you hit that? Batsman, no, I didn't touch it. Oh, I'm not out then. I went, are you kidding? And he goes, no. He said he didn't. He's very honest, this guy. I got him out of next ball, so it didn't matter. But I couldn't believe that he was asking the batsman if he hit it. Of course he's going to say no. I was tearing my hair out.
When you got him out of next ball, did you...
Oh, you didn't hit that one then? Because I bowled him. I went, you didn't hit that one then? And he went, yeah, all right, very good, and walked off. So,
Oh, dear. I'm going to show you, I took a quote out of your book towards the end, which I liked, which I'm going to put on the screen here. With a positive mind and positive outset, you can and will succeed. Put Rob in the middle of that. I don't know why. in anything you put your mind to, you control your own destiny. I've read this really badly. I'm going to start again. With a positive mind and positive outset, you can and will succeed in anything you put your mind to. You control your own destiny. It's your life, so live it the best way possible. And please be kind to one another, as you never know what someone is struggling with. I really like that, Rob. I really like that. And that's, I was talking to somebody the other day about manifestation, about, you get up in the morning and you're feeling down and you walk around with your head down all day and you're kind of like miserable. You get that back. If you get up in the morning and you smile at people and you shake people by their hand and say, oh, nice to see you, looking good today, or whatever, you probably get positivity back. Not always. Massively. But generally speaking, you kind of reap what you sow in life, don't you?
Oh, massively. I just think, you never know what someone's going through. It takes nothing to be nice to somebody. It doesn't matter if they've wronged you in a previous time. Just be nice to them. Just be nice to each other. It's that simple. Yeah. And then the world would be a lot nicer place.
Oh, and Twitter would be far less toxic at times as well.
Oh, yeah,
social media is kind of like almost like the exemplar of what life is like, because it's like I said, it's everything's so binary. You're either evil or you're great, or you're bad or you're good, or whatever. You're a good player or you're a bad player. There's nothing in between anymore. There's so many gray areas in life that we're not, like you say, behind people's smiles or frowns or whatever. You have got no idea what people are thinking inside their heads.
No, massively. And just be nice to each other. I mean, that's it's the only thing we can do. We don't know what people are going through. We don't know what's happened in their previous life. Just be kind. Yeah. Be kind and considerate, and the world will be a better place.
I think that's a very, very good way to leave this. Your book, From Disability to Ability, My Story, where can people get hold of that?
Right. You can get it from Amazon. It's also on Apple Books, Google Books. It's in places like Kobo, which is an ebook library. It's soon to be in places like Waterstones, WH Smith. It's going into 39,000 online shops. But Amazon at the moment is the place to get it. And they've also got it they've got it as a bit of a discount at the moment as well. So now's a really good time to snap it up.
There's a good message. There it is on the screen. I put Rob FR, I think, into Amazon, and you came up with everything. So it's very easy to find.
It's crazy, isn't it?
The search finds you very quickly. So that book available now. I've not read all of it. I've kind of skimmed through certain bits and I've read certain bits, and it's really good. I enjoyed it. And I will read the rest of it. You were kind enough to send me it on the PDF version, weren't you? And I'll read the rest of it as well. So good luck with your book and good luck with the season. Good luck to Harry, your son, as well, for the season.
Thank you so much.
And really good to see you, Rob. And you're also, just before you go, you're also involved with something I'm involved in as well, aren't you? The No Boundaries Cricket Club.
I am the director of cricket, believe it or not.
Does that come above or below ambassador?
Apparently it's above, but I mean, I take it as it comes, Actually,
So that means I need to bow to you then, doesn't it?
Because you're above me. Thanks to Chris, I've just bought a nice new rainbow grip for it. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was so honoured when Chris asked me to be involved as an ambassador. Then he said, would I be director of cricket, which I'm more than happy to do. Harry will be playing a few this year as well. So, I'm looking forward to it. It should be a really good year.
Well, I'm going to come along. As I said, my playing days are well gone. But I might do a bit more, I might do a bit of umpiring, and I might bring my microphone down and do a bit of interviewing around some of our games as well.
So, and if you promise not to give me out. LBW.
I know. I'll ask you whether you hit it or not.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah. Another one.
So anyway, so Rob Franks, brilliant to have you on the Cricket Badger podcast. Lovely to kind of meet you, so to speak, on here. And I'm sure I'll see you this summer around the No Boundaries Cricket Club as well. Good luck with your book. And, enjoy your summer ahead. So thank you so much. Thanks for watching, everybody. And thank you for listening as well later, because it'll be out in the audio version later on as well. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you again soon. Cheers all.
Thanks, man. Sports Social Podcast Network.